This is Great FM.
Hello and welcome back to Great FM, the official podcast series from Great HR. Everyone, I'm Ahalya, and you're joining me for another conversation from the world of human resources as we pick apart and explore some of the most relevant dialogues from that world. Interestingly enough, though, today's conversation isn't primarily about human resources. I think that's a big enough clue. We're actually talking about AI. It really is having its iPhone moment right now. We've heard this phrase many times and has kind of become an unavoidable conversation at this point. In fact, we're at a juncture in time where ignoring AI and its potential, the things that it's capable of, could actually be very counterproductive. It's impacting pretty much every single area of life, whether it's your personal, your professional, everything in between. So today we're going to be taking a look at the latter, that is the professional, how AI is actually affecting the landscape of work and why it's actually important to invest in AI, making it a significant part of the work environment rather than just a sort of novel appearance every now and again. This is starting to resemble a conversation about culture, and I think that says enough. But AI is new, so we've got to catch up. And to help us do that is David van Lochem, co-founder and CEO Augmented Workforce, to walk us through the nuances of this moment in HR. Hi, David. Welcome to Great FM.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Very glad to have you on this podcast, David. Maybe let's start at a very, very primal level, because when it comes to AI, I think there's a certain level of fear that everyone is dealing with. Would you agree with that? Is that the sense you get as well?
Yes, I have to be honest. When I look at myself, of course, being a bit of a combination of people and technology, I don't really have that fear. But I can imagine that we all got a bit confused, especially with the latest developments around generative AI. In the last 6-7 months, it has really taken off. It's not completely new. AI is not new, exists for many decades. Neither generative AI is new. But I think the fact that we are all, or a lot of people have started using it, and a lot of people are kind of like a version of the version is released of these generative AI applications on top of what they call a foundational model, is kind of, yeah, that's scaring people. And even for myself, I love to read a lot. And of course, I love this topic of technology. Mm-hmm. Every day, somebody comes to me and they speak about a new application of generative AI and how they're using it. So it's very hard to keep up with what is happening. And I think that's something I would say is not, shouldn't be a fear, but more something, take it as a challenge to grow into it.
Exactly. So more on that is what I wanted to focus on. It's really important that we get over that place of fear and actually position ourselves to embrace AI in some way or the other, because, you know, in my own personal experience, actually using generative AI and working with it a little bit, right, has helped me understand what it can do and what it can't do. And that really helps placate the fear. So in your opinion, how can people who are really worried, you know, about can I keep myself relevant? Is my job going to be taken away? How can people with these thoughts actually start making the best of AI instead of fearing it?
All right. I would say when you have anything new in life and you buy something new, there are two ways of looking at it. Let's say you get a new version of the iPhone or a new whatever, new device. You there's a way of reading the manual. Mm-hmm. And there's a way of start just playing with it and start trying to figure it out, try and error. The most powerful way of finding out more about ChatGPT is the combination of the two. So start reading about it so that you have the bigger picture and kind of like start understanding. But there is no way you can really understand without trying it.
Yeah.
So ChatGPT, Bard, it's all accessible for everyone. You don't even need to pay for it for a lot of versions. You can just use your browser to kind of like start using it and just try it. Try it, especially on a personal level, try it out so that you can apply it more in a work environment. Learn about it, play with it. That would be my motto.
Play with it. Yeah, I think that's fair. And, you know, AI is also, like we mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, kind of touching every area professional, personal, every subject, every industry is toying with it, right? Is playing with it to see how they can stay relevant. But my question to you is, when we zoom into HR, what is the HR into AI story that we really need to keep a close eye on? HR professionals would do good to keep an eye on.
Right. Actually, there are many areas in the HR function and in people that generative AI is really touching upon. Mm-hmm. And that goes everywhere from talent acquisition to learning and development. So just to give a few examples, I mean, the list can be a lot, but maybe before we go deeper into examples, let's first do a bit of for the listeners that don't really have not a lot of experience with AI or haven't looked at the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. So you basically have large language models, foundational models. These are the kind of like the big AI kind of like generators, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. And then a lot of people are or making it more narrow specifically for the purpose that they have, or they're building applications on top of it. So it really applies to a certain area, or you use the engine to really apply it into a certain engine. So I'm talking about applications of AI in HR. And one of them is indeed talent acquisition. You can look at things all the way starting from a job description. Generative AI programs like ChatGPT and Bard can draft job descriptions. I don't say it's final, but even if you get 70 or 80% right and the rest you fill in personally, it's already a good step and really would increase your productivity. It can help with the advertisement itself to make it look better, or especially when you properly prompted, you can really, really increase that as well. There is already quite some time on the market, things like video interviewing, AI-based video interviewing. So this is also, I think, something that we will see more and more often. And why would you do that is because basically, you can interview far more people. It's fair. It mm-hmm. has a bigger reach. There's a better chance of finding really the best candidate for the job. That continues actually throughout all the process, the life cycle, the way you communicate with employees. Yes, there are already for quite some time HR chatbots, but most of them are rule-based. So mm-hmm. you have a policy, AI answers based on the answers already predefined in these policies. Now with generative AI, you can actually build chatbots, HR chatbots that are far more intelligent and are far more personalized, kind of like almost like a hyper-personalized answer mm-hmm. to these questions. And that goes all the way through talent development, talent identification. You can use it to go through your data and help you identify the right talent tool. We even recently spoke with a group of heads of learning and development around mentoring. So can a AI kind of like chatbot type of mentor be beneficial for an employee in terms of the learning process? Basically, there is hardly an area in HR that cannot be touched. Having said that, for me, it's always an and. What I mean is, like, you still need to have a human oversight, and the combination of the human intervention and the part that AI can do is probably the most powerful one. And the good thing is that with the part that AI can do, with the kind of like draft that it creates, or the standardized or semi-standardized, or at least the administrative part of your work, what can be done by AI, that means like you can spend more time on the analog human part of the mm-hmm. HR function.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And, also brings in another area that I was researching, which is, I think we're always concerned about the matter of productivity in the workplace. They kind of go hand in hand. It is obviously a much larger conversation, whether that is appropriate in today's mm-hmm. day and age. For example, right, there was an article by TechMent that cited a statistic by SnapLogic, which was released in 2021, that said 61% of employees said that AI helps them to improve their work productivity. When I look at that statistic, and it's obviously increased by now given the advancement of AI and its accessibility as well, what about the people on the other side of that? Not the HR professionals, but us professionals, right? Our colleagues. How can we familiarize ourselves when it comes to actually using AI instead of it sort of being something that is brought to us?
Right. You cannot stop technology. Technology is there, and you kind of like there is no way you can stop it, technology advancement, right? So let me give a bit of a concrete example, and it's an example that is often used because they're probably, with this wave of generative AI, they're probably the most one of the functions that are probably most impacted. These are content writers. If I would be a content writer, I can look at it in two ways, what is happening right now. ChatGPT or Bard or any of the other AI platforms and tools can write content in a very fast way, in a consistent way. I mean, it's a matter of seconds that they produce something, or that the artificial intelligence produce something. So if a content writer, I can look at it like, ooh, how do I do that? That means like a large part of my job can be taken over by AI. Mm-hmm. Having said that, if you look at most of the content, so the text that a program like ChatGPT produces is very, how do you say it, not very personal. It feels too much like textbook, if that makes sense. So that means there is still a need for human oversight. Next to that, and this is a bit of a technical term, that generative AI can also have hallucinations. It can, mm-hmm. some text is missing. So if I would be a content writer, I would probably see these generative AI programs as a good opportunity to actually produce more. Because if 70% of what I normally do can already be done by AI, I can focus on the 30% and actually do far more.
Right.
And this is a kind of like an example that's the way I would be looking at it. And for every job that applies, I mean, I think there's still room for far more human touch and analog experiences. And in order to generate that time, it would be good to kind of like use AI for the benefit of kind of like automation or drafting or summarizing certain things, etc. Let AI help us in our jobs. But yeah, fighting it, I don't think that works.
Yeah.
But of course, we need to help people to transition and transform.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. So we've kind of broken down, you know, the more technical aspects in terms of processes, right? How AI plays into processes in the workplace. But what if we take on the cultural aspect of it? Obviously, from everything you've just described, AI can have a massive cultural impact. What are some of the positive cultural changes, if any, or if any significant ones you see coming through with the application of AI in a workplace?
Yeah, I think it's AI can lead to. I gave an example on the AI based interviewing, mm-hmm. interviewing. You can interview far more people, for example. That's a kind of like a fairness. Like you have more people that.
Yes.
Can, same applies for other elements there. So I think AI will help in terms of like diversity, inclusion, fairness, all these kind of elements. The second part, and probably even more eminent, is the fact that we will, with the level of AI, it will all become, and especially also when you look at elements like people analytics and analytics in general, we will become more data. Some people say data driven, data informed. Mm-hmm. We base ourselves more on data. We will still make decisions with our heart and with our guts, but also more and more with our heads in terms of like decision making. What is also a level of fairness and objectiveness, and will probably give a very strong competitive advantage as well, especially for the companies and the people, the teams that are early adapters. That's where I see big changes in terms of like the way we work today.
Okay, but David, this is interesting, right? We've got two branches of AI, let's say, only two for now, for the purpose of this conversation. The first one being AI that is, it's so intelligent, like you said, you know, can have hyper-personalized conversations, feel a lot more human, for the lack of a better word. And then there's the second kind, which is so data-driven, so backed by data, that it can be objective when you can't be. Now, is that why you're saying that it can lend to, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion in the workplace, or at least open up doors that weren't open before, because it can be unbiased? Or do you think that the more it grows, the more it starts to mimic that kind of human, you know, interaction in the workplace?
Right. If I can break down the topic of artificial intelligence a little bit and technology actually in a broader sense for HR. So you have on one side, you have already for quite some time automation, workflows, etc. The second thing, trend that really has really grown is what we can call people analytics, data-driven decision-making. And the third one is more around generative AI, super intelligence. I think especially also the level of data-driven decision-making, the people analytics stream, as I mentioned earlier, has really led to a kind of like a reduction of bias. Of course, who are critical, they will say, listen, if the data is biased, then any intelligence that you will get out of it is automatically biased as well. Obviously, that's a concern. But in general, I would say it's still better than the subjectivity, for example, of a manager. Like right so far, let's say if you take performance management as a topic, if your performance rating or whatever your assessment or whatever it is you call it is based on only your manager's view, that's not really fair in the end, because your manager might like you, there might be bias, etc. So if you can base it more on data, that helps. If your talent identification is more based on data, that helps. So I think that especially the topic of people analytics has really contributed to a more objective and inclusive kind of like approach to people at work. I believe that especially the last two pillars, analytics as well as generative AI, really will contribute to a more fair and inclusive society and workplace.
That's a really interesting perspective, also a really positive one, David, because, you know, like I said, so much fear around the situation, so much apprehension, right, about letting it into our lives. I do want to look at the other side of the coin, though. You know, you spoke just now about fairness, right, and also about, you know, a good level of human intervention is where the power lies, like finding the balance between human interaction and the use of AI. You don't want to start feeling like you're working in a workplace that is, you know, being controlled by technology. I think that's been one of the biggest revelations over the past few years, right? Even if you look at things like social media, cookies, all of that kind of stuff, everyone is, the sense that we're being controlled by technology is something that maybe doesn't sit well with us. And that's important to make sure that you don't create that kind of environment in a workplace. So for HR professionals, what are some of the specific things to actually create a workplace that makes it feel like it's equal and that you're choosing to do what you're doing?
Right. Equal and kind of like still human. First of all, if you switch off the power, there is no AI, right? I mean, like, we're still in control.
When
you
Right. Switch.
I think it's important to keep the work environment really human-centric. I think also when you design solutions, design them around people and their needs, not like because your technical capabilities are there or whatever. I think every solution should have this human-centric design. So I think that will help.
Right. And I think I'd like to, before we dive further into the conversation, I do want to actually bust some myths with you. But before that, I want to end on a very practical note, David. You know, from your own personal experience, how would you encourage people to start playing with AI? You said play around with it a little bit, you know. How and where do we start?
Okay. I would say, you don't even need to download. Just call Google ChatGPT on the website, register. It's a 2-second process almost. Mm-hmm. The same parts, any of them is fine. So the other part is like, read some, you're probably already on social media or wherever. There are a lot of interest groups. Pick up something, take a YouTube video, really start playing with it. And then start, I would say, not fantasizing, but open up your mind and think like how, if you, once you understand what it is, and once you kind of like start playing with it and you see the power of it, start fantasizing. Yes, I think that's the right word still. Like, it's like science fiction. Start fantasizing. can impact your life. I think that's how I would start with it. And start now. Everybody's starting now. And don't be afraid to ask questions and don't feel silly. I mean, at the moment, the developments are going so fast that even people that call themselves subject matter experts they don't know everything, and it's impossible to really understand everything that is happening right now. So just but start using it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, the CTO of OpenAI doesn't fully understand where ChatGPT is going to go. So I think we, you know, us not understanding every minute of it and being able to predict it is completely okay.
Yeah. Don't feel like you have missed a boat because it's not. Nobody has fully understands it yet.
I mean, the boat isn't even fully built at this point. So we're taking it as it comes. Okay, fantastic, David. So, you know, to end today's conversation, I want to sort of propose a few statements to you, because I think a lot of our conversation so far has already maybe, you know, debunked certain fears that we had and explored them in a way that's really helpful, I'm sure, for our listeners. But I want to propose a few statements to you, and you need to tell me, you know, whether this should be feared or not. Okay, we're going to do to fear or not to fear, just like Shakespeare once asked.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay.
This is Great Defense.
The first one, you actually touched upon this. Content writers will have no role to play in the future. Is that a fear or is it not?
Not valid.
Okay, perfect. Because as you explained, there's only so much it can do, right? Human intervention is still very much required. AI and AI-enabled tech will negatively affect minimum wage.
I mean, wages, actually, no, it shouldn't be feared. But my level of thinking is, across the globe, a lot of jobs are already kind of like outsourced to other countries and lower cost locations. Minimum wage is not based on the principle of demand and supply. Minimum wage is more from a fairness perspective. So even if demand and supply are changing, it will not impact immediately the minimum wage. You haven't seen that when automation was happening. You haven't seen that in when outsourcing to lower cost countries was happening. Minimum wage wasn't touched in that sense. It's more like how society looks at how you should support people.
Absolutely. That's a very valid and unique perspective. Also, something to be said, you know, for the fact that maybe it's not a fear, but a consideration. Maybe you can keep your eyes open to see if it's going to be affected. And like you said, treat people with fairness, which is very important. Now, this is my last one. I think, you know, we could really do an entire podcast on this because it kind of actually feels like a loop, a cycle of some sort. But when you look at the quality of content, right, and I'm speaking in the sense of content writing, of media, perhaps, do you think that AI will lower the quality of all of this content, or it'll demand higher quality?
It will demand higher quality. I think higher quality is where you see more the human touch. So if you talk about content, let's take the example of music. Making electronic music and digital music has already existed for many, many years. Like, it's the human being that makes really the difference in terms of like it's between good and great. And I believe that it will only push more for greatness in that way.
Push for greatness. I think that's fantastic. I think this whole conversation has been really eye-opening, David. And also, you know, puts us in a position where we really have to think in terms of the future. We have to think also taking into account a lot more factors than just, you know, generative AI and tech. It's been really great conversing with you today. And I do want to just put a thought out there, you know, when we heard AI is having its iPhone moment, I think that was more in the context of it's really taking over and revolutionizing. It has the potential to change things. But at the end of the day, the iPhone still has to be used. It's not, it doesn't just work on its own. And we're the ones that have to use it. So there is something to be said for that.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Lovely. Well, that's a wrap on this edition of Great FM, everyone. A really insightful conversation this has been, and we'll bring you some more in the series moving along. Thank you so much for listening in, and thanks, David.
Thank you.
This is Great FM.